Charles Davis. Welcome into the game in Tuscaloosa. I hope you're doing well, sir.
Ed, thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for helping us out. We love to welcome in our friends from the SEC back to this league. And no offense to the other leagues, but this league's pretty passionate about college football. And I doubt Eugene, Oregon, or out in L.A., they're counting down 237 away from college football, and we're down to 32 days.
Well, you know, I will tell you, having been around the country pretty well now, it's different levels of passion. I don't think that the SEC can be equaled when you put it all together, but the Oregon fans are pretty passionate about their Ducks, and it is quite an experience to take a team into Eugene, Oregon, and play now. My Volunteers went up there last year and got thrashed, but Michigan's been up there in recent years and had a tough time, and it is a great, great fan base. The stadium's not built too large. I think it's somewhere around 60,000. But try to get a ticket around there. Very, very difficult to do. L.A., a little bit different story. L.A.'s almost like the state of Missouri. Show me. And when you show me that you're playing well, the L.A. people will turn out. If you're not playing well, they got other things to do. So it's a little bit different. In SEC country, you're exactly right. They're counting it down at every one of those schools saying, okay, when does that bad boy go on a tee and we kick off and start our season?
Charles, what's changed about the sport since you played it back in the mid-'80s?
I think style of play has changed, obviously. When I played it, the game, you know, when you added it up, when you looked at it, when you pop it on film now, you see that it's played a lot closer to the center of the field or played to the wide side of the field. You know, you're trying to play to those spaces. Now they try and spread you across the whole field, get things opened up a little bit more. We were going to have a lot more two backs, of course. We're going to line up and run the football at you a lot more now. Obviously, the ball's going to be in the air, flinging it around a heck of a lot more. The size of the players has changed in terms of position. Linebackers have slimmed down because in order to be on the field full-time and chase these spread offenses, you're talking about linebackers now 205, 210 pounds, which is really strong safety size. And that's what we've got. So, you know, those are just some of the small things that go along with it. Obviously, the media attention is out the roof. The number of games being televised continues to go up. And I was in school when the big court ruling came down about opening things up so that more television could be, you know, more games could be shown on TV. And many people were just ruling that day saying, oh, God, it just killed college football. No one will go to games anymore. They'll stay home. Well, we were talking about attendance problems in college football, and some schools have it because of the size of stadiums and what they're selling. But for the last 5 years, consecutive minimum, college football attendance continues to rise across the country. So it's not as dire as people would think, but the biggest question mark out there for football is safety, and we're talking really strictly concussions because that's the thing that has everyone's attention. That's what people are worried about. Rules committee, injuries, you name it, whether kids or the next generation of kids will play football, will they play another sport due to the, you know, what has happened with the concussions, how they're being treated, and whether these kids are able to bounce back and play or not, or if they've had to retire from the game of football.
As a voter who not only you know participates in a lot of different individual awards, I'm reading that on your website, Charles Davis, sports.com. As far as reading what you participate in, let me just sort of point blank ask you, because I still have a trouble doing this. I live in Tuscaloosa. It's hard to separate my bias, even though I'm paid to do that. But, you know, when you attend a school, you sort of build up an allegiance to it. How do you do that when you're part of a Associated Press to vote college football? How hard is that to do when you have to 1 through 25?
Well, I think that you've done a nice job really actually laying out what I think we all need to recognize, and that is we all went to school somewhere, okay? So there's going to be a natural bias that's in there. There aren't very many places where people went to school and don't feel passionate about their school and want their school to do well, right? Now, we do have a number of, let's use Alabama as an example. Not everybody who loves the Tide went to the University of Alabama. Many of them go to many of the other fine schools in the state of Alabama, but would identify themselves as Alabama fans first. So you have a double whammy there if you end up having, you know, because plenty of people went to Auburn who are still Alabama fans. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true, and vice versa. But when you're really getting down to people who go to Troy, you know, people go to Montevallo, you know, places like that, they may say they're Tide fans or they're Auburn fans. identify that right off the top. You have a natural bias. Deal with it, okay? But can you be dispassionate enough to present a case-by-case basis that's right there next to each other and know that your school doesn't measure up and not, and vote the proper way? In other words, Alabama-Auburn. Auburn beat them head-to-head. If you still vote Alabama ahead of Auburn the next week, then you shouldn't be doing it. It's that simple. I mean, it's really, to me, not as difficult as people might make it out to be, but it's really pretty simple. The hard part is when you have, they didn't play head-to-head, you're doing comparative scores, is the schedule the same, that sort of a deal. If you find yourself always falling on the side of your school or where your personal bias is, you might need to take a step back and say, okay, am I really doing this the right way or not? Because am I really giving it the fair credence it should have? And that's where it gets difficult at times. I've been a voter for a while now in the AP poll. You know, I vote in the Heisman. I vote in a few other awards. My school, Tennessee, hasn't been a factor in that for a while now. Hopefully they'll be a factor in the future, and I'll have to, you know, get put to the test for that. The people who sit on the committee this year for the final four teams, you and I both know they're going to be scrutinized to the nth degree, right, about where their votes went, especially if we find out that it's their school, or even their conference, right? And we will take this and extrapolate it out to an unbelievable degree. A friend of mine, Barry Alvarez, athletic director at Wisconsin, is going to sit on that committee. Wisconsin is a perennial top 15, top 20 team in the country. What if they're involved? Okay, let's say Wisconsin's not involved. Now it's a Big Ten school. What if Nebraska's involved? Oh, Nebraska. Well, Barry Alvarez went to Nebraska. Of course he's going to vote for them. You see, we keep taking it to so many different degrees. Some of them are legitimate. Some of them are ridiculous. I'll leave it at this. When I call a game, I try my best to not have my tie, okay, match school colors for either squad. Well, it's gotten tougher to do because everyone's wearing uniforms with different hues to them now and not necessarily what your true school colors are. Try doing an Oregon game and try and keep your tie met because you don't know what they're going to come out in. That's the ridiculous level of it. But I remember one time a sports information director came up to me and said, I can't believe you're wearing that tie. And I said, what are you talking about? And I knew that it wasn't the school colors of his school or the team they were playing because that's our biggest rival's colors. I said, well, that's where I'm going to stop you right now. If I have to start worrying about I can't wear your colors, the other team's colors, and their rivals' colors, and then their rivals' colors, I'll be tie-less, and guess what? My bosses won't like it very much. So at that point, I could shut my ears off. That's taking it to a ridiculous level.
And Charles, I'm going to try to ask you this question. It would be the same if you would ask me as far as the sports stations that we compete against. So let me just sort of put you in the spot. Because, see, I think if you put media professionals on this committee, that you've got one that they have practice on removing that bias. But if I said, Charles Davis, which sports network is the best sports network? And I said, hey, you got to vote. But I know which way you're going to vote. That's what concerns me a little bit because you've got ADs and you've got direct affiliations with schools. It just makes me a little bit nervous because I think 13, for one, is a small sample size. You look at the top 25, many people vote in that, and you can remove some of that bias by having a large numbers. That's what statistics tells us. And also the Heisman Trophy. You can remove that by having a large sample size. With only 13 members, it's easy to sort of have your influence when your vote counts as well as the rest of the other 12.
I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle things. My understanding is that they're going to do it similar to how they do the NCAA basketball tournament, where the committee size isn't much bigger than that. And that is, if your school or your conference is involved, you're outside of the room. You're not part of that discussion. You're supposed to be removed from that one. How they're going to break that down, I think, is where you currently work. I'm not sure that, you know, if you don't work at your alma mater, I'm not sure that they're going to take that and play that into account. I think Bill Hancock, who's the head of the committee, would be a great guy to have on, have him spell that out for you. But that's how they're going to try to avoid that as much as they possibly can. Will anything be perfect? The answer is no. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when voting that you're talking about was paramount, and the bowls, you know, you played in the bowl that you went to, and at the end we voted and decided on a champion. And after a while, people started saying, but we never get the head-to-head one versus two matchup. One's playing in the Orange Bowl, two's playing in the Rose Bowl, three's playing in the Sugar Bowl. This doesn't work very well. We need computers because the human element doesn't take that bias out of it. We need something that's dispassionate. As soon as we brought the computers in, what did we say, Ryan? These computers are stupid. How can they tell? They can't do an eye test. They can't tell. Remember when the computers put Nebraska in the national championship game, having been routed by Colorado in the Big 12 championship, in the Big 12 title game? Yet they still ended up in the national title game. We're like, are you kidding? How did they get ahead of Oregon? How does something like that work? Well, the computer said it. That was supposed to eliminate the bias, and we all said, well, that's just dumb. So they tweaked it back to give it much more of a human flavor. Well, here we are. Now we've got the basketball type committee, first year going in. And I've told all the committee members that I know, congratulations. I'm so glad you're doing this and serving, and I wish you a heck of a lot of luck. The basketball people will be laughing at you, because what little controversy comes out of basketball when you pick 68 teams, and really you're only picking 30-something teams because you have the automatic bids, whatever that controversy is, Ryan, as a general rule, you know how long it lasts? Oh, these teams, didn't get in, 69, 70, 71, 72. Boy, that's just a horrible crying shame. As soon as the ball goes up in the first four in Dayton on Tuesday night or Wednesday night or whenever that is, pretty much end it. We don't hear about it anymore. We're still hearing about Auburn 2004, right?
We still
are. Not getting into the national championship game and people conveniently forgetting that 1 and 2 were both undefeated as well.
Charles Davis right now inside the game, NFL on Fox, NFL network analyst, also lead analyst on Fox Sports, and does a great job there. Former DB here in the SEC for the University of Tennessee. Let me also just sort of ask you your thoughts about the upcoming season. Who do you like? Who do you don't like? Who's overrated? Give me a couple of teams that you've got your eye on.
Well, I think the SEC goes into it. I'm going to kind of do it broad conference-wise. SEC goes into it still, to me, the number one conference in the country. Didn't win the national title last year, but had a team playing for it in Auburn. Put it together collectively, the SEC is still number one. I think the Pac-12 has a very good shot at being number two this year. A plethora of great quarterbacks coming back, guys we'll be talking about getting ready for the NFL draft. They've got some teams that they think are primed and ready to make a real run at this thing, especially with four teams being considered. I think Oregon, Stanford, UCLA are the three teams that immediately come to mind. USC, Arizona State, a little bit of the dark horse status, but they both, all those teams think they have designs on winning the conference. I think the ACC has, obviously, the defending champions coming back with the Heisman Trophy winner, Jameis Winston, and an incredible amount of talent. They can play with anyone and have a pretty nice opener, so people see them on national TV right out of the gate, and off they go. But the ACC, I think, has gotten better as a conference going along. They love playing against the SEC teams. They want that challenge each and every time, and they've answered the bell pretty well on that in recent years, more so than maybe they've gotten credit for. I think the wild card to me this year really is the Big Ten, because everyone's going to immediately roll out Ohio State as that contender. People have forgotten Michigan State won it last year, have the quarterback back, lost some people on defense, but guess what? Primetime game this year with Ohio State, that's going to be a heck of a deal, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they ended up playing twice for the Big Ten title, and Michigan State could easily be one of those teams. They'll go to Oregon week two in one of the bigger non-conference games in the year right out of the gate. In the Big 12, let's face it, Oklahoma feels like they are in a really good spot right now. Got great quarterback playing the Sugar Bowl of a young man they thought would get great play from all through the year. They didn't get it. He showed what they thought he had in that game, and I'm talking about Trevor Knight. Excellent defense coming back. They're the preseason pick along with Baylor in the Big 12. And let's face it, they Bob Stoops doesn't like to back down to anyone. I know he and Nick Saban had a slight little dust-up recently. And to be frank with you, I thought what Bob Stoops had to say was right. When we play these BCS games, let's quit calling them consolation games. Quit calling them whatever. You signed up, you went. You win, you lose. If you win, congratulations. If you lose, congratulations to the opponent, move on to the next thing. Not a consolation game. We didn't get up for it, what have you. Cheapens the whole deal as far as I'm concerned.
Charles, final question. You and I make a living covering the game of football, whether it's the NFL or the college game. As we're watching in the media I see a lot of arrest, a lot of things happening, a lot of criminal mischief, whether it's in college football. And it's not a one school problem. It's not, you know, an SEC problem. It's not a Pac-12 problem. Seems like it's across the board. Even in the NFL, we saw Rice been the major topic of conversation. Is there anything we can do to put a little bit harder punishment, discipline on some of these players to send the message on down the road that, you know, if you make mistakes, there's consequences for that?
I think we can always do that, but I'd love for us to start before that. I'd love for us to start younger and really work harder at the proper influences, the proper channels, the proper ways of doing things. And it's difficult because by the time they get to college, these kids have lived 18 years of a certain way and been influenced by a bunch of other people. It's hard to just wipe that out in a four-year period, but you're going to continue to work at it, have the programs in place, continued emphasis on doing the right thing versus the wrong things. Here's the thing. I spent my lifetime in athletics. I don't know how many times I've said this, and I'll say it one more time. When a team wins a big game and they get in the locker room, I've yet to hear a coach after a game or hear any anecdote after a game where coaches go, boy, that's a great win, you guys. Don't worry about curfew or rules. Go crazy. It never happens. They always say some variants of the same thing. Guys, know who you represent, know what it's about, do the right things, be smart, make sure, you know, we don't have any issues, blah, 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 blah. Enjoy yourselves, but do it smart, do it logically. Not everyone listens, not everyone does the right thing.
Charles, thank you so much for helping us out. I was going to ask you about the third Saturday in October, but I only asked for 15 minutes. I know we got to run, but certainly mutual respect for that game. I hope it continues for many, many years, even if we do go to 9 conference games at some point. I hope they try to protect that unique rivalry, the third Saturday in October, Tennessee and Alabama.
Yeah, we certainly hope so as well, and I know that I can speak for my fellow Vols. What we want to do is get back into this contest to where it is the third Saturday in October, and it's a toss-up on the weekend as opposed to right now with Alabama dominating. Give them a lot of credit. We tip our cap to the Crimson Tide. But I'd love for it to get back to the time when I was in school. When we were, you know, I was there in 5 years counting my redshirt year. We were 4-1 against Alabama. So that's a big deal for a volunteer.
4-1.
4-1. Now, the one was not pretty. Bobby Humphrey, 4 touchdowns, 226 yards, and Mike Shula and that crew, and they beat the heck out of us at Knoxville. But 4-1 overall, and as a volunteer, we're very proud of that record. But we need to get back into the game and make it the true rivalry it is, because right now it's obviously going all Alabama's way. But to me, it's one of the great rivalry games in college football. And let's have it continue. Love that third Saturday. And when it goes to the fourth Saturday because of calendar, that really screws up my clock. Let me tell you, for 2 weeks, I'm really agitated instead of one.